I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. For 27 years, Christopher Knight lived in the woods with no one to talk to all by himself. In 1986, at 20, he left Massachusetts, went on a bit of a road trip, and ended up in Maine, where he disappeared into the forest. He would break into nearby cottages for food, books, and magazines, clothes, and other items to get through the monotony of solitude. Michael Finkel has just published Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Story of the Last True Hermit. It's a terrific book, one that's difficult to put down and gripping from the start. Mr. Finkel, who joins me now, conducted exclusive interviews with Knight following his arrest for stealing food from a children's camp. He wrote to Knight, visited him in prison, and in the time following his re-entry into society that seemingly had no place for him. The book talks about Knight's background and family, the possible reasons clinical and psychological, and much more. I'll get Michael to tell us more about this book, Christopher Knight, and his own experience in getting Knight to talk. Michael Finkel is the author of True Story, Murder Memoir, Mea Culpa, which was adapted into a film in 2015. He has written for National Geographic, Rolling Stone, Esquire, Vanity Fair, The Atlantic, The New York Times Magazine, and GQ, where his initial piece on Christopher Knight was one of its most read pieces ever. This new book is published by Knopf. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program in Toronto earlier this week, Michael Finkel. Mr. Finkel, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So you live in Montana, is that correct?
I spent most of my life in Montana. I've also last couple of years been living with my family in southern France.
I see. That must be nice, but I'm interested in Montana because we all know that it's rather remote there, or there are not as many people, say. Is it anything like Maine?
I found a great kinship between the state of Maine and Montana, both heavily winter-centric areas, mostly rural. People in Montana and Maine both have this sort of, like, very strong independence, but the moment you slide off the road and into a ditch, the next person will probably stop and help you out. So it's that combination of neighborliness and independence that both places shared.
So as I'm reading your book, which is quite good, I'm trying to get a sense of what Maine is like and this part of the world where Christopher Knight spent nearly 30 years in. You've been there. You've been to the spot where he lived all those years. How did he go undetected all that time?
I mean, that was my number one question. So, the protagonist of the book, The Stranger in the Woods, is named Chris Knight. He spent 27 years completely alone, starting at age 20 through age 47. And he wasn't in what they call the great North Woods of Maine, where it's just pure wilderness. He was in, like, a very rural part of Maine. There were dirt roads that crisscrossed the area where he was found, and there's a lot of lakes with summer cabins and even permanent residents. And yet he went undetected, and I needed to know why. And so I went looking for the site where he lived for more than a quarter century. And it's like within 5 minutes of searching for it, I understood the woods of central Maine, especially where Chris Knight was, are so incredibly thick and like just compacted, like a giant Brillo pad, just so difficult to walk through, with thousands of enormous boulders scattered everywhere. Navigation is virtually impossible, and yet this guy was able to walk through it just about silently. And so I understood quickly how he was able to remain hidden.
Yeah, and early on in the book, after you first meet him, he tells you about him and his family, that we Yankees, we see the world differently. And so from your conversations with him and for people listening to us who haven't picked up the book yet, just sort of what kind of guy went into the woods and what emerged after nearly 30 years?
Yeah, so Chris Knight left the world behind at the age of 20. He grew up in kind of an interesting family. He had four older brothers and a younger sister. The family did not have very much money, and yet their house, inside of their house, was described to me by family friends as like a library. They read poetry and Shakespeare at night, and yet during the day they learned how to fix everything from automotive to electric to plumbing. So Chris Knight was blessed with not only a great mind for like books and literature, but also a very practical mind for how to fix things, how to solve problems. And this, frankly, allowed him to survive. You remember that story, Into the Wild, with Chris McCandless?
Mm-hmm.
Chris McCandless died. He didn't even survive one winter, and it might have been bad luck or it might have been something else. But Chris Knight, the hermit, the protagonist of The Stranger in the Woods, he walked out of the woods after 27 years strong as an ox. He was able to solve problems. He had this sort of toughness and agility and mental acuity that was, frankly, I've been a journalist for 27 years, which is exactly as long as Chris Knight spent in the woods, and I've never encountered someone with a mind as sharp as Chris Knight's. Of course, it led him to be, maybe he was too smart for our world. I don't know, but I was impressed with how he was able to solve all these problems, considering he left at age 20 and never got advice from an elder again.
Yeah, and so he wasn't really an outdoorsy person in his first 20 years, was he? He didn't hunt or fish or, I mean, he did some of that, but he didn't do it, like, say, regularly, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, he did hunt and fish because he grew up in a family with very little money, and so they did a lot of farming, and they did, actually, he shot a moose one year, which he won a license to shoot one, and the family ate meat that year. Yeah. You know, normally they could scarcely afford it, but you're right. He told me he never once spent a night in a tent until he went in the woods, and then, I know this is mind-blowing, and then spent 10,000 consecutive nights in a tent.
Yeah. You spent some time in the book talking about the makeup of a hermit, the sort of traits that someone who leads a solitary, secluded life. I guess what motivates them to retreat, and in particular, Christopher Knight?
Well, you know, Chris Knight is an outlier in many different ways. Now, throughout history, there have been many hermits. Most did so for religious reasons, but mm-hmm. Chris Knight followed no formal religion. Other people did it for creative reasons, to work on poetry or writing or painting. Chris Knight did none of those things. And then the third group was sort of like a Thoreau, to sort of explore the, you know, the inner world. And Chris Knight maybe is closest to that, but really he was a true outlier. He told me, when I asked him why, you know, why would you go and leave the world behind at such a young age? His answer was that it wasn't anything specific. He didn't commit a crime. There wasn't abuse in his family. His answer was that he felt this extremely strong internal tug to leave the world behind. He never felt comfortable being around other people. And he just, like, he followed, I mean, what his heart wanted was something very radical. And most of us probably don't fulfill our dreams as much as he did. And he decided to leave the world behind, as you mentioned, just put his keys in his car and, you know, left his car in the woods and walked away at age 20. And he really found contentment, and so he stayed. You know, why did he go? Because he felt this tug. And why did he stay? Because he found, despite a lot of suffering and difficulties, he found true, deep contentment.
And so to survive, the food that he ate, I mean, he wasn't hunting or anything like that, was he?
So, yeah, I mean, in addition, I could be a journalist for a couple hundred years and probably never come across a story that was so rich. You know, there's the solitude angle, there's the survival angle, and then, as you mentioned, you know, the central main is, it's just about impossible to live by yourself alone. You can't just hunt and fish. Even ancient humans that lived there, you know, worked in groups and teams. It's just impossible. Chris Knight compared himself to an animal many times, and he meant that as a complementary relationship. You know, when I leave my garbage cans out at my home in Montana, a bear will come and attack it. Why would the bear go through my garbage can and not just pick berries? Because it's more efficient. Mm. Now, Chris Knight knew that breaking into cabins, even though he had a code, he never smashed down a door, he never kicked the window in, he always picked locks like a Houdini. He knew it was wrong, but it was just so much more efficient to take, you know, food from people's cabinets than it was to hunt and fish, and so he decided to do it. He was never comfortable with the decision, but he made the decision, and he became a master thief.
Yeah, and so there's some funny lines in the book that you've written. He was rather civilized as a crook. He would replace the whatever he got into, the door or whatever, so that another burglar wouldn't get in. Or the one story that I remember, the passports. He wanted to swipe a bag, and he noticed that there were passports in there. He took the bag, but he left the passports because he knew it would be inconvenient for the owner.
Right, so he had this code about stealing. Again, Chris Knight told me, don't romanticize me, Mike. Don't make me seem like more of a hero than I am. So he said, take the good with the bad. So Chris Knight was a thief, and when he was put in jail, despite the fact that Chris Knight was suffering, he told me, I deserve to be in jail. He was raised not to steal, and he stole. But as you mentioned, he did have a code, and, you know, he never touched your computer, your television, your jewelry, and always made sure when he left the cabin that it was locked, he had picked, he would set the door so that it would lock behind him, and he would lock it because there's thieves out there, and the thieves might take something valuable. Yeah.
the things he did to survive mentally. He did have a television at one point. He did read a lot because that's one of the things that he looked for as he went into people's cabins and the sort were books and magazines. So he kept abreast with the news, and he listened to Rush Limbaugh and he watched Seinfeld, right?
You're right. I mean, he had forms of entertainment. He maintained an extraordinary solitude from actual living human beings, but like, you know, the characters that lived in books and voices through the radio, and even he watched television for a couple of years, and then he decided it took up too many batteries for his little 4-inch diagonal black and white television that he stole. Now, those all occupied a little bit of his time, but mostly what Chris Knight did is what you or I would term nothing. He sat there in the woods, literally just sat there. And I asked him, you know, how did that feel? What was that like? And he said to me, and this has been repeated by other hermits who've written about their time alone. He said he was never for a moment bored. He said he didn't even understand the concept of boredom. And even more kind of profoundly, when I asked him if he was ever lonely, he said, not only was he never lonely, he actually felt the opposite of loneliness. He felt incredibly connected to almost everything in the universe. He really felt, I'm not capturing the poetry that he used. I tried to capture it in the book, but he really enjoyed his time alone. It was like a shocking thing to hear, because it's so easy to ridicule Knight for his decision. But when you listen to him describe it, I mean, there were times where I was almost jealous. I wish I had that much joy in my own life at times.
And you talk about yourself in the book as well, about how at certain points in your life you've sought solitude on your own. The most that you spent was, what, a day or so?
So, you know, humans are really, really social creatures. If you go around and ask everyone what's the longest they've ever been alone, meaning not seeing anyone or making a phone call or sending an email or text message, more than 90% of us will never in our lives spend a complete day in solitude, which is crazy, because the only person we could ever truly know is yourself, and we're afraid to do it. It's really terrifying to us. But I've always been, you know, a camper. I've liked to go out into the woods. I've found myself relaxed, and there have been more than a dozen studies around the world that they've all said the exact same thing, which is time unconnected in nature. I'm talking get away from your cell phone, and I'm not talking about a long time, just a little bit, makes you calmer, it makes you happier, and it makes you smarter. We just don't do it enough. You don't have to go away for 27 years, but maybe you could just take just a little pinch of Chris Knight and put it in your own life, and I just think this whole planet would be a little better if we just calm down a little bit.
And I guess your understanding of that, you told him this in letters that you wrote to him initially before you met him, and in conversations you had with him in prison and elsewhere. I guess, did that make him want to talk to you, say?
You know, Chris Knight never planned to talk to anybody. He really planned to live his entire life completely anonymous. But he was arrested breaking into a summer camp, stealing food.
Yeah.
And upon his arrest, many journalists tried to contact him, from what I heard, something like 500. And I read about him just in a newspaper report from my home in Montana, and I couldn't, like, you know, I had probably the questions that all your listeners have, like, how do you survive without a fire, you know, and why? Why would you leave the world? And I was really, and what do you have to say about modern society? Like, I was really anxious to hear what Chris Knight would say, and a month passed, and he said nothing, and I decided to hand write him a letter, pen and paper and envelope and stamp, all those old-fashioned things, and I sent it to the jail where he was being held, and to my great surprise, he wrote back, and that's the way our relationship started, by writing letters back and forth, and they were really amazing letters. They were, I tried to capture his humor and his intellect in the book. I'm not doing a good job of paraphrasing it, but he really can tell, he really has insight into both why he left society and what he thinks about the modern world today, and that's shown through his letters. And really, I, as a journalist, I couldn't help but follow this story.
Yeah, and so he viewed you as his Boswell, that you were going to write about him and tell his story to the world. When was the last time you talked to him?
Yeah, so, you know, Chris Knight gave me the most valuable thing in the world he owned, which was his story. And he asked for nothing in return. I didn't pay him for this. I didn't, you know, he didn't even have any editorial control over the book. I didn't write a single sentence for him. I wrote it to be as accurate as possible. But he did ask one thing. When he finished telling me his story, and there were a few questions he wouldn't answer, and there's no way to talk a guy into speaking who can go silent for 27 years. But he said when he finished telling me what he wanted to tell me, to please leave him alone. And I honored that wish, and it's been close about a year and a half since I have spoken with him, and I would love to receive another letter from him. But he asked me, he's really a true hermit. He didn't want to be my friend. He doesn't want a relationship with me, and I can respect that, and I've let him live his life.
So in the acknowledgments you write there that you had two fact checkers for this book. So how do they check facts with people like Chris and his family when at different points in the book they tell you that they don't want to talk to you?
Yes. So it's hard to, you know, Chris Knight's story is literally unbelievable. Like 27 years without a fire, you know, you really never slept in a cabin. You know, I went to his, for example, like the fire part, I went to his campsite 8 times. I spent the night there 5 times. I was just looking for a single charred piece of wood. He said he never spent the night in a cabin. Now, you can't prove a negative. You can't really prove that he never did this. But one piece of evidence that overturns anything he said and his whole story collapses, if there was one security camera photo of him sleeping in a bed, one picture of him taking a shower, and his whole story collapsed. And in 3 years of researching this book and in all the years that he was a sort of a mystery, nobody ever found a shred of evidence that anything he said was untrue. I mean, as hard as it is to believe, to the best of my abilities, you know, I had two fact checkers. I had both his lawyer and the lawyer that prosecuted him, who were privy to all these, papers that weren't public. They mm-hmm. went over my manuscript. There's, you know, his story. There's not a single shred of evidence that his story is true. Everything he told me held up.
And so what does it say about us then, or our society, that there isn't a place for someone like Christopher Knight, that they have to resort to going into the woods for nearly 30 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the sub-themes of the book is just what you said. Like, what do we do with someone who doesn't fit into the world? Now, if you're a murderer, well, we got a place for you. That's called prison.
Right.
If you're completely and clearly mentally damaged, then we have therapy and we have hospitals for that. But here's a guy, Chris Knight, who clearly had an amazing mind and yet didn't fit in. And we don't have a place for you, especially the society. I mean, all of us probably have observed it, has going faster and faster and faster. Just look, just observe, like, when we have 1 minute of free time, do we just sit and breathe the air? No, we pull out our phones and look at a screen. It's incredible how fast things are going. And really, evolution cannot keep up with this. We all evolved. I mean, humans are a 2-million-year-old species. For 99.9% of the time, we all lived, like, in little groups of hunter-gatherers in like the forest and the grasslands. That's really all our senses are calibrated to that. And, you know, there's a reason why when you go in the woods, you feel calmer and more and just more attuned. It's because that's what we're all calibrated to, and yet we've ignored it. And sort of Chris Knight, you know, there's times, Joe, I got to admit to you that I think, you know, it's not Chris Knight who's crazy. It's really the rest of us. I admit that.
Yeah. And you bought flowers for your wife and spent time with the cowboys?
So you know, Chris Knight, again, despite the fact that he didn't speak to anyone for 27 years, when he finally, you know, he agreed to talk to me, it's a gift that I will never be able to fully thank Chris Knight for. He did have a funny sense of humor. He called my children, who were all born in Montana, the cowboys. And here's a guy who abandoned his family and, you know, didn't talk to anyone at all for 27 years. When I visited him in jail, almost every time he would say, "So you're abandoning your family, you're shirking your fatherly duties." He would sort of make fun of me for not spending time with him and not paying attention to my family, which I found amusing from a guy who abandoned the world altogether.
Yeah, I mean, he is a crook, and he did his time. But I mean, there's a lot of wisdom, isn't there, around this guy and what he did?
Yeah, Joe. I mean, spending all this time around Chris Knight really actually had quite a profound effect on me, and the most profound effect was how was about time. You know, I feel like, you know, I have three little kids. I feel like I'm constantly in a rush. I have a job and deadlines and text messages are coming in. I feel very constrained by time. And here's a guy. I mean, none of us are going to go 27 years, but we can take little bits and pieces of Chris Knight. Here's a guy who told me that he never really, he wasn't even conscious what year it was and had to sort of guess at the decade, and told me one time in his beautiful poetic language that the moon was the minute hand and the seasons were the hour hand. And he could, like, one time he said to me, let's stop our conversation and maybe continue again in a couple of years. And I'm like, what? I have a deadline. But the way he conceived of how time passes affected me just a little bit, which is all it takes to make some sort of change. Like, I go a little bit slower about my business. And, it's not a bad thing to take 10 minutes and just do nothing. It's really, I feel like if I can make a rule that we all just took 10 minutes a day to do nothing but sit quietly and breathe, I feel like the world and society would be significantly better.
Yeah, or several hours to sit down and read your book in solitude, right?
I mean, even better, if you have the time, I would be honored.
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, I read it in about two goes, which is a lot, I don't usually do that, but I mean, that's how compelling this was.
Thank you.
A lot of people have said they've read it in one go. Will you get to Maine at all for this book tour? Because you're going all over the place, right?
Yeah, I've been really, first of all, thank you so much for the kind words about the book. That means, a lot to me. There's so, the book business is so crazy. There, you walk into a bookstore, you're bombarded by so many things. The fact that you would pick up mine is a real honor to me. Yeah, I've already spent some time in Maine where the story sort of took on legendary status. And, the people of Central Maine are so kind to me. Even if they hated Chris Knight, everybody mm-hmm. was, like, inviting, and they wanted to tell me their version of this hermit story. It became, like, it was like the Loch Ness Monster of Maine. It was like this mythical creature. It would be as if, like, tomorrow afternoon you read that this Baranosaurus thing walks out of, the lake in all of Scotland, suddenly has this, creature that they thought was a myth. And that's sort of what happened in Central Maine. Like, the myth became real.
Yeah. And you talk also in the acknowledgments about the kindness that you received in your times there, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's something about, I think you would probably know something about cold weather places. Listen, there's something about, Montana, Maine, and pretty much the vast majority of Canada. Like, there's something about, like, if everyone has a long winter, it sort of makes you tough and individualistic, but also sort of, like, at the same time, really compassionate for when, like, if your heat breaks or your car goes off the road. Like, there's this, I love it, this mixture of ruggedness, individualism, and sort of kindness to your fellow person. And that's throughout Canada, that's throughout Montana, and it's in Maine, but it's not in a lot of places in the world. So consider yourself blessed.
It's a beautiful book, and I appreciate your time today. Congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me on.
The book is called Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Story of the Last True Hermit. It's published by Knopf. Its author, Michael Finkel, joined me on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plante.